Good afternoon. Welcome to the Saratoga Automobile Museum for the Vox Pop Car Show, a production of WAMC On the Road. I'm Ray Graff. Now, today's episode, it's being taped, so no calls today, no emails. Instead, we'll be talking with this incredibly good-looking audience. Oh, you're beautiful. Give yourselves a round of applause. All right, that's sufficient. Well done. We have this guy over here, Gordon Fricke, with us today, former Ford tech Don McCabe, Volkswagen enthusiast, man about town, Philip Morris. They're all here. It's the Vox Pop Car Show from the Saratoga Automobile Museum, and it begins right after the news.
This program was produced by WAMC On the Road and sponsored in part by Stinging Nettles Botanicals, Catskill.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. I'm Ray Graff. Today we are not in the studio. We are not live, so don't call it in. Don't send in an email. Instead, we are here on the road at the spectacular Saratoga Automobile Museum, and this is the Vox Pop Car Show on the road. We are in front of a live audience. You are fantastic. We're going to have some fun today. I hope you brought automotive questions, internal combustion inquiries, some cases. Some people brought some pretty sweet rides. This place is great. Now, I may have a reputation for being a little curmudgeonly. Who wrote this? Wait a minute, I object.
Totally true.
You know what? This show is going to be awesome, so let's do it. Let's introduce our Vox Pop pit crew. First up, it wouldn't be a car show without this guy to my left, Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for well over 100 years, and he doesn't show it. Hello, Gordon. What's happening?
Oh, my goodness, Ray. What is going on here? We're usually alone in the studio. We can hang out, and now we got everybody watching us.
It's pretty exciting. You brought your 65 Buick Riviera. It's parked outside.
And the wipers did work on the way out.
Did anybody see that car? That is magnificent. That one, yeah. Beautiful. So, are you nervous at all?
Just a touch, because okay. We usually don't do this stuff with this many people staring at us.
Well, let's hope Don McCabe behaves. Don is a former Ford tech, many years, knows his way around a truck like no other, and he's a bona fide motorcycle enthusiast. Don, what brings you to this garage today, my friend?
Well, I think it has to do with my visit down to the booth last month when you guys bombshelled me with a question from the public, and I guess I passed the test.
Yeah, you were sitting there, and then we asked you a question. You sprang to life. I thought you were dead for a portion of the time. You're fine.
Yep, but you mentioned, yes, I spent some time in the Ford dealership, got away from it, and Gordon was able to bring me on board with his business and rejuvenate my interest in the automotive field and had a lot of fun doing it the last 15 months.
Now, okay, I've talked to you down at the shop before. How do you work with him? God, it's got to be difficult.
Well, I think we're on the same plane.
I behave when Don's in the
really?
Shop.
Is that why?
I don't throw anything. I do swear a little bit. But
yes, you do.
And we get to blame everything on what would Roger think.
Okay, and speaking of that, I'm glad you brought that. Where did you get this old, I'll hold it up here. Oh, it's taped. Okay. You could stand up if you want. If you don't want, it's not that exciting. It's Roger's old, I believe it's Ford, right?
Absolutely.
This is a service tech's jacket. It feels pretty
How old do you think that jacket is, Don?
It's nice.
That's got to be from the 80s at least.
Yeah.
And
it's
so
that older.
The Roger business is occasionally when I complain about these new cars with the electronics and the doodads and all this other stuff, Gordon will say, what would Roger think? Roger was a very old school tech, right?
Yeah, and he worked on stuff where you could still see what you're working on, and you didn't have to remove 300 components to get to the one item you're looking to fix.
Yes, back when America was America. That's right. Finally rounding up the shop is Mr. Philip Morris. Philip is the CEO of the Proctors Collaborative, which owns and operates Proctors in Schenectady, the Rep in Albany, and Universal Preservation Hall here in Saratoga Springs. You might ask yourself, this is a legend in the arts community. What the blue blazes is he doing on a car show? There's a reason for that. He is an avid Volkswagen collector, a passion for caring for VWs, in need of a little love. Mr. Morris, tell us a little about your obsession.
Oh, it started when I was a young hippie, you know, and I had to have my VW.
Yeah.
And of course, that meant having how to keep your Volkswagen alive for the complete idiot.
I have
do
that
you
book.
Remember? I have three of them.
I do.
One's greasy as hell. The other two are okay.
Yeah.
And I learned from the book how to rebuild my old VW, and I rebuilt it. And of course, that is one of the reasons collections happen. It's because of passion.
How many cars are in your collection?
Memory. Eight.
Eight. Oh, so what do you got?
I have a 71 Karmann Ghia convertible.
Yeah. Now, Ghia, is Karmann Ghia, is that a German name? What the heck?
Ghia?
Italian.
Italian.
So what's he doing making a Volkswagen?
They were trying to come up with a way, and it was very successful, actually, to have a sports car look without a sports car engine.
Uh-huh. Well,
and
wait
so the
a minute.
Look is really cool. And 46 horsepower is 46 horsepower.
Wait, it's 46 horsepower. So this is just a step above the Flintstones. Is that it?
46 steps above a Flintstones.
Wow, that's crazy talk. What else is in your collection?
A 81 VW pickup, a Rabbit pickup. I really love that car. Only about 70,000 were made. So that was a barn find. A 90 camper, which is out back.
You're kidding me. You brought a camper.
I brought a camper.
I'm staying after the show. I'm still on vacation mode here.
Yes, it's available to you afterwards.
That would be nice.
I parked it in back because I didn't want to park in the grass. And then I have a 92 camper, Eurovan in that particular case. And then I have a non-Volkswagen. I have a Fiat 500.
Aha.
I just sort of like it.
You know, we just got back from the beach, and every time you go up to Maine, on the main drag, people are parading their cars along, and you see some great oldies. And every now and then you see one, and you say, why did they make it? Saw a Volkswagen thing. You got one of those?
I don't, but I almost bought one a week ago. I was that close.
Oh, you're kidding me.
I'd like one.
You guys know what the Volkswagen thing looks like? Yeah. Ugly car made of old tin cans, right?
It's a military vehicle was how it started.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no wonder they lost the war. Well, you're listening to the Vox Pop Car Show from the Saratoga Automobile Museum, and we will be right back. Welcome back to Vox Pop. We're on the road at the Saratoga Automobile Museum in front of a live audience, and you are beautiful. Oh, God. Oh, beautiful. All right, now, this part of the show is just like on the regular Vox Pop. We've done our chit-chat. I've complained about new cars. And now we get down to the questions from the listeners. In this case, it'll be questions from all of you or some of you if you're... Is anybody awake? Yes, a few of you are still awake. Okay, I'm going to throw it over to Peter Hughes for our first question. Peter, who's up?
All right, we have John H. from Troy, New York. Where's John?
John H.
Oh, right here.
Okay.
And John has got a question about, I wish I'd asked this a million times, about his first generation Corvette.
Okay, so, can John stand up or no?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello, John.
Hello.
Go ahead.
So the battery on my old car drains if it sits for a few days, which I understand is probably due to faulty ground. So I'm wondering if you guys can provide any recommendations, a logical approach to track it down, because there's a number of them on the car.
Faulty ground is possible.
So what year is the car?
1960.
1960. So there's not a lot of things drawing on those batteries in those years. Does that car have a generator or an alternator?
Alternator.
It does. Okay.
Replacement engine.
Been retrofitted.
Yeah.
Yeah. The alternator can create a current draw. And super easy on that car to determine that. If you disconnect it, the big fat wire, see if your draw goes away. And to do that, you'll need a test light between the negative battery post and the negative terminal. And Ray, don't get nervous.
Okay, he's not going to die for doing this.
No, we're not going to.
This always scares me.
We're not going to reboot the car like we do on every episode.
All right, so, but be careful all the same. You know what I mean?
You're basically looking for the test light to extinguish. You can also do that on an old car like that, fuse by fuse. And you may have a wire that's chafed somewhere minutely that's drawing some current. But the alternator is quick and easy to isolate because the diodes in there can leak and they can draw current from the battery and kill it. But you can also get a disconnect switch for the days you're not using the car.
And how do you put a disconnect switch in?
On that car, you just do it right at the battery. It just switches the battery on and off. There's a turn dial or a knife switch style.
Does that make sense for you?
Yes, it does. I keep a battery tender on it, so that mitigates the problem, too.
How's the car running?
Runs great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How fast can you get it to go?
more than the speed limit.
Above the speed limit.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, we didn't give you a last name. You're fine. Thank you for that. Let's give it up for him. That was great. Thank you. If you're just tuning in, this is a live recording of a Vox Pop on the road for WAMC. We are here at the Saratoga Automobile Museum, and it's fantastic. Has everybody had a chance to look around at this place? It is amazing. There's a huge Mercedes SUV in the back that I swear it would sleep three.
Thing with six wheels?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you like
awesome.
That?
I like it very much. Well, listen, we'll get to more about this beautiful venue a little later on. Right now, it's the question and answer portion of the show. Gordon Fricke is here, Don McCabe is here, and Philip Morris is here. We're ready for question number two, Peter Hughes.
Where is Faith Shores? Faith, look at that. Here's your question.
Hi, Faith.
Hi, I'm Faith. How does a young woman learn to drive a stick shift when she doesn't have a car to learn on?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, even in my day, and you know, I'm like early 60s, right? But in high school, we used to have to take driver ed on a stick shift, so we all knew how to do it. Now, my kids, boy, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to be the car owner of these, you know, and just watch them grind the gears.
Yeah.
So that's a great question, Faith. Boys, what do you think?
I have an idea for you. Do you have a bicycle? Do you shift the gears on your bicycle? Okay, so the only thing left is figuring out how to use the clutch in order to do it. And so you need to find somebody with a stick. I have seven of them.
There you go. You just offered.
Go to Philip Morris's house. That's the answer.
Problem solved.
And a little bumper sticker on one of them, a magnetic one that says millennial proof.
I do have to chime in. I'm not going to hog all these answers, but my daughters, one of them is here, maybe both are here.
Oh,
I didn't
really?
See them both.
Take a bow. Stand up. Come on.
Hannah
Hello,
and Emma.
Hannah. Hannah.
Where's Hannah? Oh, there she is. So I have supposed to have taught them how to drive a stick car for about the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And I have some older cars that I didn't really want to use as test beds, and I had an F-250 plow truck that Hannah felt was a little bit too big and beefy, but now we've got a little tractor. So maybe a tractor, a lawn tractor or a small tractor would be good to start on with a gear shift lever and a clutch pedal, or even a riding lawnmower, right? Don, what do you think of that?
That will all work. Motorcycle riding is very easy.
Yes, that's why we brought him here.
Very easy to teach somebody how to use a clutch.
Faith, do you have a motorcycle?
Standing on your feet.
So, no motorcycle.
But that might be an opportunity. The clutch, releasing the clutch, generates the same motion as the motorcycle would to move.
Don, how many bikes do you have?
10.
Faith, are you able to meet us at Don's house this weekend?
Here we go. Suddenly it's a referral service again.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and then there's the column shifts, okay? Have I told you the story on the air about my time driving a column
three
shift
on the tree.
For the first time?
Yes, three. We talked about it on the
we
last
did, we
when
did
Don
talk
was
about
there. Three
it.
On
yeah.
the tree.
Yeah, that was a...
And then they'd stick between gears, and you couldn't get them to get out of gear, and, you know.
Yeah, very briefly.
Yeah. Ford Falcon, 1960.
Oh, God. I don't remember what it was, but I was in a band. We were playing a gig right here in Saratoga, and the guitar player had a few too many. And by the end of the night, he said, oh, you got to drive. I was in the horn section, so, you know, we were always second-class citizens in any band. And he's like, you got to drive this. And I had never done it, and I swear he never drove that thing again. It was just shot. All right, Peter Hughes, who's next?
All right, I'm talking to John Ferrari, and he's got a question about VW collecting.
Ooh. VW collecting, yeah. Stand up, sure, if you can.
Yes, this is probably directed most appropriately to Mr. Morris. what are the best investment grade VW Beetles to collect these days? I know, you know, the early ovals and the pretzel windows are probably out of range. But what would be your?
I'll tell you, the Beetles are so interesting because the parts are prolific. So, in fact, the Beetles don't necessarily sell, or from an investment point of view, for a lot of money. Beetles are still common. It's like the Model A when we were kids, right?
Yeah.
You could buy a Model A for $100.
What the heck? No, that's not me as a kid. No, no.
But at that time, you know, and that's kind of what a Beetle is like now. I mean, there's exceptions, certainly, but I think you got a lot of options, right? I haven't bought a Beetle yet, actually, mostly because, you know, I prefer to have something a little more specialized at this point, like the Ghia, so.
Let me ask you guys a question about VWs. Now, you're crazy, Gordon, about German cars and VWs and stuff, too. And you have, do you still have that beautiful VW bus?
Two of them.
Yeah, I mean, incredible. And you have to be as objective as you can here. People collect them, they look funny, the Beetle, ha-ha, nice-looking car, whatever. Are they good cars? Are they well-made cars? Was there anything special about the mechanics and the engineering of these cars that you'd want to drive them?
We're going to refer to Roger.
Okay.
They were simple. They were not full of electronics and features, and yes, they were bare bones. The brakes weren't great. There was no air conditioning. The steering was poor. They had no power.
Way to sell it, Gordon. Jeez. Yeah, nice job.
But they were durable, inexpensive. You couldn't kill them, and they were easy to work on.
Yeah.
They weren't big investments.
If you say so. You want to add anything?
Well, I tell the story to my kids, who all drive sticks, but one time I was driving from college near Utica to New York City with a friend who was a Saab owner. And I knew I had a clutch that was not doing great, and so I had bought a clutch and a throwout bearing, and it was in the car. And on I-90, near Schenectady, actually, the clutch just gave out.
Ah.
We pulled over, and 2.5 hours later, we got on the road again and drove to New York.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for that.
In today's world, that's about 20 hours now to do a clutch, if now, you can even find one.
At a couple hundred dollars an hour in many places.
Yeah.
This is a live recording of a Vox Pop on the road here at the Saratoga Automobile Museum. What a fantastic place. We'll learn more about it in a little bit. The great Gordon Fricke is here, his cohort Don McCabe, and Philip Morris. All right, Philip, you said you bought a Volvo recently, right?
No, not a Volvo.
That was somebody else who looked like you.
Fiat he has.
Oh, Fiat? No, something, somebody, didn't one of you guys buy a Volvo? Who here bought a Volvo recently? I swear to God, I'm going senile. All right. All right, we'll move on. Won't give you the phone number, but Peter, why don't you tell us?
Sure. Where is Nathan Herbie? Do I have that right? Nathan, let me get just around there. Hold on.
Oh, gosh.
Well, this is going to be fair.
Everyone as you were?
Could be a motorcycle question.
Yeah. Nathan's got a question about something his mechanic asked him.
Okay.
Yes, my mechanic asked me to drive more spirited,
and I'm trying to understand what he meant by that.
Your mechanic said drive more spirited. So he's saying you're being too timid when you drive.
He's looking at me.
Oh, you're the one? Oh, you deal with him. All right, so what do you think?
He deals with me.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. He has to deal with you.
So I tell people this a lot. When they have cars that are developing carbon buildups, they're not running properly, and they need more hard driving. And I say you need to drive. You need to do more spirited driving and go faster, rev it up, and drive like you're on the Autobahn, which might get you some tickets, but cars don't like to be cooped up and idling and puttering around all the time. If you have a performance car, that's what it's built for.
So what you're saying is I should hit the gas more despite what my wife says.
Yes, and if you get stopped by the police, your mechanic recommended spirited driving.
All right, fair enough.
Should I mention that Buick Riviera coming out of Scaticoke today?
The carbon that came out the tailpipes? Yeah.
Hey, I was on the Northway with my 90 camper going 75, and they liked it.
Sure.
Volkswagen.
It's the Autobahn.
Camper going 95.
75.
What could go wrong? What could possibly go wrong with that? All right, fair enough. It's Vox Pop on the road. It is a car show today with Gordon Fricke, Don McCabe, and please silence your phones, folks. Don McCabe and Philip Morris. Peter Hughes, our producer. Who's next?
Hello. Looking for Bob Godgard. Godgard. Hello, Bob.
Is that Bob?
Bob's got a question about his 56 T-Bird.
He doesn't even need a mic. He's right here in front. Go ahead, Bob. Right. Use the mic anyway.
So I've got a 56 T-Bird.
Nice.
We used to drive it to the farmer's market that used to be right over on this side every weekend.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit.
Oh.
And it sat. And it sat, and it sat, and it sat.
Right.
And it still sits.
Oh, boy.
So we haven't started this car now in several years. What would be the recommendation, since it probably has bad gas in it?
Yeah.
The gas was probably in the carburetor, and...
Just tell him to give it to me.
We've got a Ford guy right here.
Yeah, so getting rid of the gas is probably the first thing. Siphon the gas out of the tank somehow, put some fresh gas in it. There are additives. There's tons of different brands that can be added. Try to cycle the fuel through the system, through the carburetor. With any hope, you know, there isn't some clogging in the carburetor, but it sounds like you may have some issues in the carburetor, which means we'd have to take that apart, clean some orifices, clean some jets, and then start the cycle over again.
How about this? Change the plugs?
Plugs, yes, because they've been sitting, and they're probably, whatever was on there now has grown. A slang word we always use is gougats. When something grows in the automotive vehicle that's not supposed to be there, we call them gougats.
Can you spell that?
That's a Roger
term.
Roger term.
None of it's science.
You haven't tried it at all yet?
No, okay. I haven't.
Yep. Why? Why are you scared?
It's lime green.
It's lime green, and that's why you're afraid?
Yeah.
Now, you got to get it out. You got to get it out this year.
Wow.
And I would try. I would try.
You got to paint some flames on the side of that thing, man.
Yeah, I did get underneath it, and it looks like there is a plug in the bottom of the gas tank.
Oh,
well, that's
great.
Even better.
That's best. Yep.
Yeah, that or the old way.
Yep.
Did you put fuel stabilizer in it when you stopped driving it in the gasoline?
So
you got a head start.
Yep.
You got a head start.
You're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Now, is 57 the peak year for those T-Birds, the one that is really collectible?
Still a two-seater? 57?
Yeah.
He's
got a 56.
Last year, 58 went big, right?
So
yep.
They were hugely popular. People still collect them. I'll ask you guys, they have a reputation for being like super sleek, sharp cars for the time. Were they extra sporty? Were they really good cars?
Do you ever experience those cars, Don?
Ford would put effort into the T-Bird because of its
prominence.
Popularity, yes.
Yeah.
Make silver editions, anniversary editions, but Ford did put some effort into making that car more prominent than it was.
And you've driven them?
Yes.
You like?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Yep. You know, Lou Costello, when he broke from Abbott and Costello, he signed a contract to appear in Vegas, and part of the contract was a 57 T-Bird. then he died. But still,
that car could still be around.
If we were around in Ray's time, we'd know all this.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, that's Don's last appearance on the show. It is a live recording of Vox Pop Cars on the road today at the Saratoga Automobile Museum. Way down at the end is Philip Morris from Proctor's Collaborative. What does the collaborative mean? It's Proctor's, right?
It's Proctor's, but it's also Saratoga, UPH, and the rep, and soon a facility in Troy. Yeah, yeah. It's a collaborative.
All right, fair enough. And then Don McCabe, who works with Gordon, for a couple year and a half now, right?
Yeah, Don is actually phased out, kind of, but...
Really?
I'm trying to phase down a little bit myself, and he's helping me do that.
Are you going
to
retire?
Not 100%.
No?
Not yet.
Okay.
Don't worry, I'm going to keep seeing you.
I'm looking at your family back there. Yeah he's going to keep working.
Hey, Ray, can I tell a quick little 56 T-Bird story? Very quick.
Sure.
So, I really wanted my father to buy a 56, 57 T-Bird. I just think they were just, I thought as a kid, they were fantastic. And I found, after my mother died a year and a half ago, 95, I found a file of papers, and in it was a note written by me when I was 10 years old, promising her that I would buy her one when I was 21.
Oh, so did it happen?
Did you come clean?
One-twelfth scale.
Welcome back to True Confessions. Who's our next question?
All right. Well, this person didn't write their name down, so I'm going to read it. And if it sounds like you, raise your hand.
If you sound like Peter, I apologize to everyone.
Yeah, one of a kind. To the panel, when do you think EVs will become a significant part of the auto market?
Well, they're already a part.
Already is, not in the U.S.
Yeah, but significant was the key word there.
Well, it all depends on how you define significant. Go ahead, Gordon.
Well, the adoption to EVs started out with a lot of speculation, and they thought things were going to go quicker. And the timelines, in my view, were never practical, and the infrastructure is not there, and the desire of the public is not there. So if they're going to reach 50%, maybe in 10 years, 20 years, I don't know. It's a tough question.
Let me ask you guys a question. I've never driven an EV. I'm sure one of you has or more. How long does it take from close to empty to charge it fully? How long does that take with current technology?
Well, you know, you need a fast charger.
Well, how fast is the fast charger?
Depends on the car, depends on a lot of things.
It can be done in 3 or 4 hours, but most of the time the charges are better if it's done slower. So an overnight charge is better.
Yeah.
Now, 3 or 4 hours, okay.
You can do it 20.
You're putting your finger on one of the reasons why it's not as significant right now in the market, right? Because the U.S. is a huge place. People like to drive.
Right.
And if you have to stop your road trip for 3 hours, you know.
20-minute fast chargers keep you going along the trip. So you can, a lot of these vehicles have they'll map out your trip.
Yeah.
And they'll advise you where to stop, when to stop, and how long you got to charge. If you need a fast charger or if you need a slow charger, and you kind of hopscotch.
All right, let me ask a question. Show of hands, how many people in the audience have an EV? Okay, so that's what, about a sixth of the crowd? You have an EV too? The boss has an EV, I didn't know that. That looks like a big, huge gas guzzler you got. That's an EV? You gonna let me drive it? I wanna check it out. She's not nodding, folks. She's not nodding. All right, Peter Hughes, it's almost time for a break. Do you want to take one more?
Yeah, I think we've got time for Rich Angelo.
Thanks very much. I guess for anyone on the panel, as a car enthusiast, I'm just looking for an opinion here about what cars you think are the most fun to drive, and you can even break it down into new cars versus old cars.
Well, it depends on what your fun factor is. If you want a lot of power,
fun factor.
There's a lot of high-powered vehicles that are currently available. Everything is 300 horsepower now, which was a tough number to get back in the 50s and 60s.
Really?
The Chrysler 300 was named because it was the first production car that was 300 horsepower.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And that was a big number in the, I don't know when that was, early 60s, late 50s maybe. But A lot of people like small two-seaters. MG started the whole craze because they're light, the power-to-weight ratio is pretty good, they're easy to drive, they're small, and they're not expensive. Mazda Miata took over and made a bulletproof MG. They don't break down, they're phenomenal, and they have decent performance. A lot of choices, right? What do you guys
think? Yeah, and fun factor. The definition of fun factor, I had a discussion with somebody earlier. How fast have you ever been in a vehicle? We told him, but I explained to him, I have more fun maybe going 5 or 7 miles per hour faster in a corner than I do going down the highway at one, I'm not gonna say
just
what the number
side
was.
Note here. Side note, how many accidents have you had?
We just talked about one on the way up.
Really?
F-250.
Yeah. You take a turn too fast, you know. It's curtains, right, Don? We can edit this out. It's Vox Pop on the road. It's the Le Car Show. We got Don McCabe, who just admitted to speeding in turns. hey, listen.
Recommended speed. 5 over recommended speed.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Gordon Fricke is here and Philip Morris. Do we have time for one more? Or you want to just take a break?
I didn't hear Philip's favorite car.
Oh, what's Philip? Tell us what you. It's a VW wagon, right?
You know, you're going to. It is.
That's it.
I have a 2018 and a 2019 all-wheel drive stick VW wagon, the Golf wagon. And stick four-wheel drives are pretty, they're pretty rare.
Is it an all-track or a sport wagon?
No, sport wagon.
Yeah, yeah.
I cannot get over how much fun that car is to drive.
Really?
It's the six-speed.
Yeah.
That's the factor.
And that's, you said that was 46 horsepower?
Great handling. It's just, they're knockouts, both of them.
All right, well, I'm not sold. But let's take a break. It's Vox Pop. It's On the Road. It's the great Philip Morris and Don McCabe, Gordon Fricke, and you lovely people who came up here. Thank you for coming. We'll be back. We'll take a break. We'll learn more about the Saratoga Automobile Museum in a moment. Welcome back to Vox Pop at the Saratoga Automobile Museum. On the road, we're not live today. No calls, please. No emails. Thank you. We'd be remiss if we didn't take a minute here and talk about this amazing, insanely cool setting this afternoon. We are surrounded by amazing vehicles, the history of wheels at the remarkable Saratoga Automobile Museum. Gary Siepser is a board member of the museum and one of our hosts this afternoon. First of all, Gary, thanks for being here. Give him a round of applause, everybody. We're really overwhelmed that we could record in such a cool, with such expensive ancient Mercedes. And, you know, God forbid anything happens. That's all I can say. Does it make you paranoid when people come through and they get a little too close to that 1950 Mercedes 300 SL?
Not in the least. Not in the least, because we know that people who come here love cars.
Yeah, but accidents happen, right?
I've never seen an accident here, have you?
Well, not yet. Well, let's see if Don McCabe can take a few turns. That Mercedes, that's a 300 SL, and it's about a 1950, is that...
300 SLs are the ones with the interesting doors.
Oh, but one of these oldies is a 300 too, isn't it?
That one is also?
Yeah, but I thought, isn't that one?
That's a 540K from 1938.
Okay. So what is the model of this one that Mrs. Graff said is gonna be my next car?
That is a lovely, lovely machine.
Yeah.
That was restored by students at a school in Kansas. And it's really an amazing thing to see and to consider that that restoration was done by college students working on a four-year degree in auto restoration.
It's immaculate. And you said it was in 1950?
1950.
That is the most spectacular example of a 1950 German car that I've ever seen. Amazing. If you get a chance, folks, after the show, don't do it now, just check it out. It's incredible. There are so many great cars here. I went upstairs and checked out, for instance, the Amphibicar, which I now have to have one, okay? Just drive it out in the pond. Hey, I had too many, honey. I'm driving out. Oh, I'm in the lake. No, it's an amazing vehicle. And first of all, how do you get it in the building? It's upstairs. How do you do it?
Well, I could tell you that some great volunteers carried it up the stairs.
Is that what you do?
No.
Is that what you do, Gary?
We do actually have a freight elevator. So all of those cars that are upstairs get there by elevator.
And this Mercedes exhibit that's on the ground floor,
yeah.
How long is this going?
This will be here through spring
okay.
of 2027.
Right.
And then we'll have something else. But
what else? Why don't you tell us?
Well, I can't really tell you.
Why?
Well, because it's not certain, and we don't like to talk about what isn't certain, but I will give you a hint. We're in a lot of conversations with the Peterson Automobile Museum in Los Angeles. So for people who know the Peterson, whatever we're going to get from them is going to be very cool.
I don't, but I find your lack of candor a little troubling. Well, tell us more about the museum. When did it start? This was not a museum when the building was built, right?
No, this was a bottling plant. This is a historic building. It's an Art Deco kind of design, Art Deco colonial. is what it's called. And this room that we're sitting in was the actual bottling room. This room was filled with machinery and a lot of noise.
This is Saratoga water being
Saratoga water being bottled.
Oh, very interesting and deal. And when did the Saratoga Automobile Museum?
So the museum got started about 23 or so years ago, and we've been in this location for about 20 years. Uh-huh. And we have a great relationship with the park to be here. And we're just delighted with that arrangement.
And I know people were invited to bring their flashy old cool cars and park them here. Do you often invite people to do that?
Almost every weekend. There is a car show going on here of various car clubs, of various organizations. So I would want to invite everybody who's listening to take a look at our website and take a look at what's on the schedule and come on out.
When is the stick shift VW wagon exhibit going to be?
We are, as we speak now,
really?
We are going to be working on that.
That is so
and,
cool.
And it'll be cool.
Well, how do people find out more about the Saratoga Automobile Museum online? How do they become members? You can become a member of this,
absolutely.
Right? You're a volunteer. They don't even pay you to do this.
I get paid with such joy from being here.
Oh,
Ray.
Gary.
You're on the same program I am in with Ray here.
Exactly, exactly.
All right, well, why don't you give the website then?
The website is, just look up Saratoga Automobile Museum and you'll find us.
Hey, man,
right
it
there.
Is so great that we were allowed to do this, that you allowed us to do this. Let me shake your hand. Let's give it up for Gary Seepser. Great job, buddy. Appreciate it. All right, now, Don, before we went to break, you were talking about possibly, you didn't get your chance to say what your favorite vehicle was. So why don't you just say that right now?
I whispered that to Gordon.
Yeah.
What do you got?
I heard, I heard it.
1980 F-150 pickup truck, regular cab, short box, 306 straight with a Clark T18 transmission.
Does everybody have their decoder rings on? Because I didn't get all of that. I got to be honest.
What's the final drive ratio going to be on that?
That's something.
Manual shift, by the way.
Yeah, why is that one special, Don? And let's not go into great detail.
I had one.
Really?
And it was when you put that truck in low range in first gear. You could walk alongside it if you needed to for any reason and catch back up to it and get in. So,
and did you do that?
I have.
I'm not surprised. Don McCabe, thank you for being with us today. Gordon Fricke and Philip Morris as well. We're going to pause the tape because I have no idea what we're about to do. Oh, we're going to keep going. Okay, great. Semi-professional broadcaster. Ah, Peter Hughes. Well, let's continue with the questions here.
All right,
Vox
looking.
Pop.
I'm looking for Sally. She's got a 2005 Mitsubishi.
Yeah, I got T-boned by a college kid under 25, and because it's a 95.
Come closer to the mic.
Because it's a 95, the insurer said it was totaled. But I want to keep driving it, and I'm willing to pay for the repairs myself, even though it's officially totaled. So any recommendations or how can I go about doing that?
Gordon Fricke just got dollar signs in his eyes. I got to be honest with you.
Well, total loss is kind of a deceiving term because you think that the car is utterly destroyed. It's simply an insurance lingo is it's reached a point where they're not willing to pay to fix it and they're going to total it, give you a check, take the car, and it's gone. So that car being an 05, did you say? The value is not that high, so it totaled easy. What I would do, if you haven't already, is connect with a body shop and say, is this practical to fix? And you're going to get a payment from the other person's insurance company. You can take that money, fix the car. You'll get a salvage title, which probably won't matter to you at this stage of the car's life, and see if it makes sense. If the body shop says the chassis is tweaked and it's not worth trying to straighten or the damage is just too massive, then you'll find out. How bad does it look to you?
I already ordered the parts for me. I did exactly that.
Yeah.
I ordered the parts and I'm getting it fixed.
Yeah, and that's not a bad idea.
I'm never going to sell it. It's my car till it dies.
Yeah, and we've done that with vehicles in that very same circumstance. Buy them from the owner, fix it, you got a good car back, and it's still usable.
Well, now, Gordon, back in the day, a bent frame was almost a death sentence. What do you guys? How can you guys fix something like that?
Well, you can stretch and repair unibodies. There's frame straightening equipment for that. If the car's too mangled, it's not practical to do. But there were times years ago where shops would put clips on cars, meaning sections of the car, front clip, back clip, side clip. You'd cut the car, get a donor car, weld it back together, and you're rolling. Not so much today. The insurance companies want things settled, done, totaled, and crushed, and they're gone.
Now, let me ask you a question one more time about the T-boning incident with the college kid.
The college kid.
Was the college kid looking at his phone?
I'm sure. He was probably speeding. He didn't pay attention to where he was going. And I was in the left turning signaling to turn left. And I think he thought he was going to hit me, so he went into the northbound sign. And while I was turning, and I ended up hitting his passenger side.
That is terrible.
It was.
That is terrible. And these kids today, am I right? These kids today. Let me ask you guys, Don and Gordon, about the incidents of, I know you don't do that much body work anymore, right? You
no.
stopped doing that.
Yep.
But in the time that you did, you only stopped a couple few years ago, did you see an increase with the increased prevalence of phones?
Well, so I still do towing.
Yeah.
And I do accident recovery for the police. And the amount of distracted driving that we see is insane. And oftentimes the officers will get a confession from the driver, other times they won't. And I was at a major accident in Hoosick one year. I was with four troopers, the traffic was one lane, and people were going by in cars with their phones visible. And one of the troopers next to me screamed at somebody and said, "Put that phone down." And I said, "There's four troopers standing from here to the road, and these people are not even paying attention."
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem. And frankly, I mean, I don't have any brand spanking new car, but I saw one that has looks like a big screen TV on the dash. How can you focus on the road when you're looking at that?
They all have screens now. What would Roger think of that?
What would Roger think about that?
I think more important than the ones that confess are the stories that they come up with to cover.
Yes. Yeah.
It is Vox Pop on the Road. It is a car show with Gordon Fricke, Don McCabe, and Philip Morris. And no phone calls today. No emails today. Do we have any questions from our audience?
We do.
Go ahead, Peter Hughes. Hit me.
All right. From Anonymous, somewhere in this audience wants to know, what's the difference between torque and horsepower?
Oh, boy.
Oh, I love it.
I see, Don, this is written all over now. No?
No, you're the one that came up with the well. that pulled the horse pulling the amount of water out of the well.
That's right. Was that a question we came up with? So in simple terms, torque is the twisting action that actually does the work. It makes things move. Horsepower is a number attached to the amount of work that can be accomplished in a given period of time.
So, as compared to a horse?
Well, it started out with a horse lifting some kind of weight with a pulley.
What if you had a lazy horse? I mean, did you have to have more than one horse?
That's a horse of a different color.
It's the average horse.
Yeah. Standard horse.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, so torque does the work. Horsepower is a measurement of that work in a given period of time. So big diesel engines may have 200 horsepower, but they might have 400 pounds of torque, where a little four-cylinder turbo might have 250 horsepower, but 170 torque. Does that do you any good?
Is there going to be a test on this?
Yeah. Fill it out.
Yeah, forget it.
Yeah.
It's great to have you guys here. You've been very quiet over there, Philip. Do you want to say something?
No.
40, how many horsepower is that, Carmen? You get 46?
12.
46. But what's the torque?
But, you know, you look at little diesel VWs, diesel rabbits. The torque was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean,
off zero, you could just move. You only lost it at the end.
Exactly. It was gone at any RPM. Yeah.
All right. Do we have any more, Peter?
We do.
Let's go,
Ben. Where's Betsy? Do we have a Betsy in the room? Betsy.
Hi, Betsy.
Hi. Glad to see you guys. This is a general question. Car prices have gone up so much.
Yeah.
Suggestions, strategies that you would have for common people to maintain their cars to make them last as long as possible.
That's great. And we talk about that a lot during the
monthly
show that you do with me, Gordon.
Yeah, we do.
So these are great tips for everyone in any season.
Maintenance is key, and don't be fooled by the manufacturer saying it's okay to do the oil changes at 10 or 12,000 miles or 15,000 miles or until the maintenance reminder comes on, because they're under pressure by the EPA to keep the oil in the crankcase for environmental concerns, which we all understand. And the car manufacturers like to make their vehicles seem to be less expensive to maintain than the other. So if BMW says, man, we got an expensive reputation, let's keep our oil in the engine for 15,000 miles or 1 year. So 5,000 miles seems to be a good standard now interval. High quality synthetic oil, high quality filters, and just do everything the maintenance manual requires you do, and don't skimp on it, even when they get older.
Does the amount of torque the engine has affect the oil life?
It could be the other way around. When the engine gets tired, the torque goes down.
Ah, I just like saying torque, that's all. Continue.
You want to get torqued up.
Any other answer for our question about keeping a car in tip-top shape?
Well, Don being at the dealership, he knows all about maintenance.
So other things is tire rotations. Try to keep your tires lasting as long as they can. Some people don't rotate their tires until it looks like they need it. Establish a period of time and rotate your tires irregardless, and you'll get better life out of the tires. You also need to be a little bit cautious about some recommendations, maybe being too frequent.
Interesting.
Yes.
I just want to mention one other thing. I grew up with a dad as a mechanic, and I overhauled an engine with one of those manuals, too. Problem right now is that it's impossible to do a lot of work on your own car. You can't. Points and condensers don't exist anymore.
No.
I complain about this literally every month on the show. It gets really boring, and I apologize.
So you really can't do much yourself.
Yeah. Roger's coat is over there.
So I got into the business just about the time when those things were changing. When I started, there were points and carburetors, and then you started getting to electronic ignition and fuel injection, and people would come into the shop and look at me and say, "You're one of those words that I can't use here today."
Well, thank you, Don. Torque.
Our message. You're torquing me.
Fine.
And they blamed us for the transition. My uncle used to be able to tell me what was wrong with that car, putting his hand on the fender. But those days are gone. A lot of that stuff is good for us. The electronic engine control, but it did take away from your hometown ability to
work on these cars.
Well, that's a great question. We have only a handful of minutes left here, Peter Hughes. Any other question?
We do. This is also from Anonymous. Gordon and the panel, what is your view of extended warranties?
Oh, I love this. You see the ads on TV all the time.
I can only say be very, very careful. Do not buy them willy-nilly without due diligence, and you should only get ones that the manufacturer endorses or supports, because you could be up the creek with a massive repair and zero coverage or skimpy coverage.
But, I mean, by the same token, when the car warranty runs out, you could have a massive repair and still be stuck.
Yeah, that's. I'm just saying, be careful. They're a good thing to have, because car repairs can be insane.
Yeah.
You know, you can have a $20,000 estimate to put an engine in today.
Yeah.
So it's a good idea. You just want to be careful not to buy what you think is a good plan just because it's cheap, or maybe, you know, there are celebrities endorsing them.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you ever have, like, half-off Tuesdays or anything at the shop?
That's today.
Yeah, he took half a day off today.
Oh, I see. Oh, very clever. Well played. Very witty wild. All right,
actually,
anything
Consumer
else, sir,
Reports,
Peter?
I want to throw in, Consumer Reports recently did a really interesting analysis of secondary warranties and the claims against them, how small and few they were. And basically, it's one of the most profitable places for insurance companies to play is in extended warranties for cars.
Okay.
That's where they make the
most money.
I believe
it, because they're advertising them everywhere.
Well, on that dark, disturbing, and negative note, let's end the program.
Well, hey, we wanted to make sure to give you that grouchy thing.
Thanks very much. And well played there. Let's give it up for Philip Morris, everybody. Good job there, pal. Don McCabe, you brought Roger's jacket, you performed well on the show, and you didn't swear. Let's give it up for Don McCabe. And then there's Gordon Fricke, who has been my friend and cohort on the radio for how many years now?
I'll bet it's 14.
14
maybe,
years.
Maybe
wow.
More. I don't know.
And there's our show's as still as dull as ever. It's great. We still haven't gotten it down. Give yourself a big round of applause, because you are fantastic, okay? Fantastic. Thanks to the sponsors who helped make this possible, Rough and Ready Engine and Hose Company, number 2 in Greenwich. Thank you very much. Let's give it up. Mama Mia's Restaurant in Saratoga, yay! And our featured sponsor, Stinging Nettle Botanics in Catskill. The Vox Pop Car Show was a product of WAMC On the Road producer Peter Hughes. Give it up for Peter Hughes. He won't let you leave until you clap for him. And our engineer, Matt Seriani. Matt, thanks a lot. And also Riley Phillips. I remembered his name. It wasn't even written down. Thank you all for joining us today. I'm Ray Graff. It's been a lot of fun. We'll see you at the car show. Let's go.
Yay.